Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? What?
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
At the Movies on BFM 89.9.
Hello there, I'm Umar Paganampake Pagan, joined as always by Ian McNally and Bahe Yusuf for another episode of Binge Watch. We're binge watching Star Trek Discovery Season 1, Episode 7. It's called Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad.
We're back to the long, crazy titles.
And what's more, probably the most trekkiest of Discovery episodes ever.
Yeah.
It was another good one.
Yeah. Mm. It did really hit me. I think it's in my notes. We have a lot of similar notes. It was like, this is the most Trek episode they've done, because it actually is a Trek episode that they've already done back in Next Generation.
That's right. So the Trek episode was a time loop episode, Bahe, in the Next Generation called Cause and Effect. It's probably one of the most beloved time travel episodes.
Because it has Kelsey Grammer in it for a bit.
Captain Frazier.
Of the USS Bozeman.
And, you know, this was also the very... I mean, okay, there are more time travel episodes in Star Trek than you can probably count.
Yeah.
Okay.
Temporal anomalies and all of this stuff.
I mean, but that was the point on Voyager. They were always looking for them to try and get home, so it got to be just like spatial anomaly every week to the point where it was getting boring.
Yeah. And with Star Trek The Next Generation, with Cause and Effect, it was actually the first time loop episode in Trek history. So what happens in that one is... Oh, man, what a great call. Open to that episode, the Enterprise D blows up, killing everyone on it
before the credits run.
What?
And not only that, considering like motion control models at the time, it's like the ship is at one angle and one engine blows up and the whole thing spins around with the saucer section of the axis, and then Data's just freaking out. It was like, abandoned ship, and then the whole thing goes. And then you get the credits to start.
Ooh.
And then it flashes back to the reprise to what happens afterwards.
Ooh.
And then it explodes three or four more times.
Yes.
And it's great every time. Mm.
Correct. And just like that episode, Data is the one who figures it out and is like outside of the time loop or trying to crack the case.
Yeah, he can send the message through in that case. And I think Troy is picking up echoes. And not only have they been repeating time, but in a localized area. So like... time has passed outside that area when they get out of it. And also, Kelsey Grammer's ship has been there for like 60 years.
See, that was the other thing I wanted to ask. In that 30-minute loop in this particular episode, is the whole sort of universe resetting, or is just that little spot?
I presume it's Mud just traveling back in time that works.
Okay.
And it's just due to Stamets' connection to off-site backup. Is how he's retaining some. He's figuring. I mean, what I did like about this and what they didn't do in that cause and effect episode and in other ones is the idea that you've not seen every loop.
Ah, right.
Like by the time Stamets gets involved, he's already on he already gives across the impression that he's been through this like a lot more than everybody else.
Yeah. And it's the second jump for Burnham, right? Yeah. Or we see Burnham for the second time in this time loop, but Stamets has been doing it tons and tons of times.
Yeah. Mm.
And you know,
and he's getting really annoyed with it.
Yeah.
And that's also why this works so well as an episode, because one, it doesn't utilize the standard Trek trope of a temporal anomaly or some kind of spatial anomaly that's actually sending people back in time. It's actually an individual like Harry Mudd who's doing it for his own ends, which I really like.
And he's being incredibly smug while doing it.
Oh, he's being so smug. Great. That sequence, that smash cut of him killing Lorca
over and over again. It wasn't
a smash cut.
It was like a CGI.
It was like transitions. It was great.
And my favorite one was when he beamed him outside the ship.
And he just seemed this is the window. And he just like kind of jerked a bit. That was kind of creepy. That reminded me of... that's a haunted house music movie in space. Event Horizon, where the guy goes out with no spacesuit. Reminded me of that. Just that kind of...
Yeah. No, I think I liked... I don't know. I see, the thing is, it's hard for me to jump in with you guys because you guys have seen this before. To me, this is like, this was great.
Oh, no, that's good.
This is a great episode, guys. I don't know where you fit, but this was amazing. No, but like, I just want to echo everything you guys said. Like, the thing about how the loop isn't identical was great, right?
Like after a while, they just said, like, give up on going. We're not going to go to the bridge. Screw it.
No yeah. Point.
There's a waste of time.
But it's not just that. But as an audience, you're watching it going, oh, they didn't. Stamets didn't bump into them this time.
Yeah.
You know, they
picked up further down the corridor.
Yeah, they meet up further
like,
down.
Stamets is like, I tried warning them last time. Those two are useless. I got to figure out a better way of doing this.
So I like that you, and as an audience, even though you know it's in a loop, right? You don't sort of zone out because you think it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Because so now they meet later. They get some. They get to a point earlier. They keep going to certain events entirely.
Yeah.
And that was really just fun.
It's even outside of Star Trek. It's looking at something similar to a movie we reviewed a while ago, Happy Death Day. It's not just saying we're doing a time loop show. It's like, right, we're going to do a time loop show. Let's look at every other thing that's ever done a time loop and let's build on top of those and not just parrot the same things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
They did that very, very well.
Yeah, and even how Mudd just sort of like knows how everything's going to happen. He's like, oops, stop here. This guy walks out.
He starts playing classical music.
Yeah, he starts playing classical music. He doesn't have to look when he presses the floor. He knows where he's going. Yeah, it's great. I like it. Yeah.
Sorry. Harry Mudd is back.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
The moment he stepped out of the Gormagander.
Yeah.
Is that the bad guy from the Lego movie? The Lego Ninjago movie?
Oh, that's Garmagon. Garmagon. No, hold on. The Gormagander thing was fantastic because as soon as one of them goes, it's a space whale. God knows all Trek fans know whenever there's a whale, it's going to be good Trek.
Oh, okay. The other thing was, again, just how even like in an episode that this is like, it's not a main plotline episode, unless, of course, you get the plotline being Burnham's development. Lorca is like straight away the war captain. He's just like, whatever.
I don't give a damn. Just get
just
it done.
He's just like, have at it. And it's like, the second loop, like Burnham's like, I'm going to go down and check this out personally. And he's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
And then Tyler says, I'm going to accompany you just in case. It's like, again, I still don't care.
Yeah. Even like the first time he shows up, he's like, okay, it's not
dangerous. It's not Klingon.
Yeah, he's like, it's not dangerous. Take us down from yellow alert. Let's keep going. And I was like, oh, no. But because of Federation, whatever, we have to go and save it now.
And also, I mean, even using the Gormagander to kind of further the plot line based on what this creature is, right? I mean, the way they describe it, they say it's a creature so single-minded that it does so at the expense of its own existence. Yeah. And that is a big metaphor for the entire series, it seems.
Yeah, that's Lorca, that's Burnham, that's Mudd. Yeah.
That's Tyler.
Tyler, could be Saru as well at times. You know, they're all in their own little thing. I mean, the helmet looked goofy when you stepped out.
Yeah,
of it.
Yeah.
But I'm just like walking around, I was like, it's got to be Mudd.
It's got to be Mudd.
It's got to be Mudd. Yeah.
You know, initially when he jumped out of the Gormagander and he was just shooting and vaporizing people, I was like, wow, this is a bit of a dark turn. He's just killing people on sight. Yeah. And then, of course, you realize he knows he's in a time loop, so he doesn't really care what he does, right?
Yeah, because at that point already, he's already saying that I'm just trying to figure out how your ship works. Like, I've got the information I need this time, so it's fine.
Yeah.
And like, he's already, again, that already gives the impression he's done it a few times already and he's gotten pieces together. So he's just doing that, murdering people, and then like, they'll come back to life and again, I'll just avoid them next time.
This is just like that, the early levels of Diablo, right? Yeah. Yep, this guy's here, I'm just going to avoid him.
After a while, he's got the cheat code, so as soon as he gets taken on board, he just uses the transporter to get where he wants. Yeah. He doesn't have to kill those guys.
Moves along. Yeah.
Let me tell you, I'm playing Mario Odyssey on the Nintendo Switch right now. I die so many times trying to get those power moons. That's exactly what I do. Right, Goomba coming out from the left, jump. not many classic callbacks in this episode. I mean, they did mention Betazoid in passing, which is where Deanna Troi's character is from. Betazed, that's right. She's a Betazoid. Harry Mudd talks about robbing a Betazoid bank, right? Mm-hmm. And
that's got to be tricky. Like robbing a bank from a series of telepaths or empaths might be tricky.
Might be tricky. And yet again, it just goes to show, I guess, just develop the extent of Harry Mudd's amazingness at being a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
That fantastic scene where he just turns around and goes, "Don't be a hero, random communications man."
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, because they got like, he had like, I was thinking of Kivis Fajo. Was that the guy who had the disruptor, the Nausicaan disruptor beam or whatever? It was one of the episodes where Data got kidnapped because he's the only one of the working Sung androids in the world or in the universe. So he was very highly valued to collectors. Okay. And this collector had a nasty weapon that was supposedly the most painful way in the universe to die. But they found a new way to do that with those purple pebbles.
The purple pebbles, yeah. Which Burnham ate.
Yes.
That was pretty cool.
That was very cool. Yeah.
And that was, again, as a nice way of breaking the loop. It's like, and also it broadens the world again. It doesn't have to, no one knows that she's, like, I didn't think the whole thing of, like, I'm important to the Klingons.
Yeah.
That's right.
Like, the fact that they would pay for T'Kuvma's murderer. Yeah. Not too sure. I mean, hopefully they'll backfill that, because while T'Kuvma gave them the cloaking device and a reason to fight, I don't know if he's as, you know, revered as he was by his own followers, like Vok. Back on his own ship, like whether the rest of the Klingons have now fallen in love with him or whatever. But just, that was just a super smart thing. I was like, huh? She's like, me. And I'm like Mud. I'm like, why are you
working? Yeah, same. I didn't see that coming at all. And I didn't see her. I didn't see I would have thought the negotiations would have lasted longer. Mm. She was just like, boop, boop, eating that. I'm dying now. See you later.
Well, she knew she had a ticking clock. It was like, I think they again, they don't even explain. They just say, like, if it's uninterrupted.
Yeah.
It repeats.
Yeah.
So he has to, they have to interrupt it with that.
Yeah. And that shot of just, of Mutt just going, and at that one after Michael dies, and he just goes like, shit, I know she's right.
Yes.
I have to let this happen now.
Damn it. Yeah, no, that was really good.
That was really good.
And actually, the way that was played at each death, at each explosion, it didn't feel repetitive, even though it was. Mm. And they did enough to make you want to know what's happening in the next reboot, right? With a lot of these movies and TV shows that play with time in this way, once you reach the third one, you're just like,
you get a little tired.
Move along now, please. Yeah. Thank you very much.
You're right. Yeah.
No, they paced it incredibly well. But again, Rainn Wilson was just great.
Rainn Wilson was fantastic, but he was hamming it up to no end, and yet it worked so well. I didn't care.
Lorca says to him, are you mad? He says, no, I am mad. There's no way that should work, and it worked pretty well. Like, and that was right before the ship blew up, wasn't it?
Yes.
And he's just talking on the view screen.
Yeah.
That was the great moment. Loved it.
There's a lot happening in this episode as well. I mean, the wonderful thing about time loop episodes in general, I guess across science fiction TV shows, is that it's a great way to move character plot lines fast.
Okay.
Right? In this case, the Ash Tyler and Michael Burnham romance, or budding romance,
it's
right?
It's also a good way of showing how characters' inner feelings are without having to deal with the repercussions of those feelings yet.
Mm.
So, like, they've foregrounded these two kind of like each other, which, if Uma's theory turns out to be true, will be heartbreak for everyone involved.
Oh, so much heartbreak.
They're building it so much. Like, he's so tall. I mean,
you're tall for a human.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And they're building it up, like,
but not tall for a Klingon.
But like that, his reaction to everything, like, it's almost to the point where he's almost a Mary Sue character, which I know is a bad term these days, but like, everyone loves him,
right?
He's good at everything. Where's his flaw? I mean, if his flaw is as a Klingon, that's a pretty goddamn big flaw. Yeah. And it's going to be interesting.
Although
to see
I have a question. The spy training place that he went to get to become human, did they also teach him how to dance?
Mm.
They taught him how to dance, and then they taught him.
That's enough, because considering, you know, Burnham is, you know, full human and grew up in Vulcan and Starfleet, and she doesn't know how to let men lead.
Yeah.
Yeah, they taught him how to dance. They taught him Wyclef Jean.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Al Green. I mean, all the necessary soundtracks for
I don't
romance.
Know about Wyclef Jean, though. But Al Green, absolutely, I'm all for that. But yeah, I don't know about Wyclef. I thought they would have picked a better song. Wyclef Jean in.
Hey, let
in
me tell you, We Trying to Stay Alive is going to be available all the way to the 23rd century.
I was.
After
the disco t shirts, I was checking the Star Trek's official store to see if they were selling the pillowcases now as well.
Oh.
Or like the little Star Trek Discovery, or the little USS Discovery embossed pillows. That
I didn't see. I didn't notice.
They look nice.
Oh, no. I still don't want a disco t-shirt.
I'm so getting you a disco t-shirt.
I still don't want a
disco. They put them in a cage and say, like, hey, it's still on sale.
No,
I'm surprised we didn't get one of those, like, what did they call them? I called them last week, violators. Little ad at the bottom saying, visit the Star Trek store to buy these t-shirts now.
but what an awesome way to get to that romance story. I just thought that played out really well. It could have been cheesy, it could have felt rushed, but somehow, because of Stamets's frustration in the way he delivered that line of he likes you, it worked, right?
Yeah.
Because it's coming from that character. I mean, even when their first encounter and Stamets is losing it, And he's clearly just high on mycelium plane juice or whatever. Well,
no, he's annoyed. I mean, it's annoying enough when you have to tell someone something three or four times, but God only knows how many loops he's gone through. Yeah. And every time it's
But that's why the narrative works so well, right? Because unlike other shows that do this, the writers were very quick to get to the point of, yeah, okay, you need to tell me something secret so we can figure this out and move along very quickly. Yeah. Let's not waste the audience's time. Because as an audience member watching it, I already know what's happening.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are you so stupid? Come on.
Yeah.
And you also think, right, there's a 30-minute window. There's only so much time they can spend dancing before they have to move the plot along.
So wait, hang on. I have a question. The first time we see the loop where Stamets bumps into Michael and all that, that's the first time, we're assuming?
I presume so. He doesn't say then. This is the
no, he doesn't. He makes fun of the both of them and their kind of awkward interactions, right? Which is fantastic.
Well, that's the very first time.
The first time
he runs and he says, we've done this before.
Okay,
that's the second time. The next time you see him, he's always like, I can't seem to stop this. Like, he's tried a couple of times.
Oh, no, but like, are we assuming that second time where they don't bump into, where Stamets sort of...
That was like the third or fourth time they got to the lift, because there was a long shot of the corridor with the lift saying, he ain't here.
Yeah. But are we assuming that is more than just the official second time?
Yes.
We may have seen Mr. Few jumps already?
Because we're assuming that Stamets has tried other people along the way and no one's believing him.
Like, he's ran to the captain and the captain's like, turn off the lights. And half an hour goes by and it's like, too late. So then eventually he works his way back around to like, okay, Byrne was
maybe
probably
Michael,
the best one.
Got it. Okay.
Because as well as that, like when he shoots Mud in the back and he's still like, I've tried every time, I can't, killing him doesn't change this. By that point, he's probably seen that he's ran into them a few times now already. So they're usually
in the area,
or they're easier to move. I think also, again, having Stamets be the guy who is the one who remembers the loop is again a stroke of genius, because we've seen him be mirror creepy and then be high as Fruit Loops, and now you're getting to see that he's not completely lost his mind.
So after this episode, I was thinking maybe they're not going down the Mirror Universe line. Maybe they're going down the Stamets being unstuck in timeline, right? Or being at least part of a different...
I think the mirror thing was just, here's a big way of showing you in a 30-second, in a tiny window, that A, there's same-sex couples on the Enterprise, which is great.
Which is great.
And B, here's just some way that something is wrong.
Yeah. He somehow exists outside the normal time universe, right?
I don't know if it's going to be time or not, but I think it's more like, I was expecting his eyes to go black. Because that's another one. You need something visual to kind of give it away. And the mirror thing kind of raises your hackles. You're like, that's not right. That's not how those things work. And it's a shorthand for something is wrong.
So are we assuming that it's not necessarily a sinister thing then? Because after that one, I kept waiting for Stamets to be sinister,
or to be for him to be evil, or the last episode after that, he was kind of high all the time.
Yeah. So
whereas in this one, like, they seem to be treating him as like a drunken puppy. Whereas in this one, he was back being a character who's his own agency and is like not completely impaired. His faculties aren't impaired.
Yeah.
He's still trying to figure things out. He's taking good actions and he's working with team members. And by the end of it, he's as much a character as he was before got the mycelium thing. After that, he started becoming a walking MacGuffin or a walking warp drive for a little bit.
Yeah.
And like the fact that they were all like, look at how he's all messed up because we stick him with needles every time we start the car.
It's so funny.
And also we're breaking all those eugenics laws that we, did to stop the rise of the next can. But, never mind. It's so funny now. That's kind of, his personality change. It's like, that's horrifying. Seeing this was like, he's still in there.
Yeah.
And he's still able to work things out. I did like that again as another side effect of being able to do that.
I do have a gripe. I have a gripe in this episode. That thing.
That party sucked.
No, that was... See, that's why you don't pick Wyclef Jean. No, but it's that... For me, it was that thing where Ash Tyler goes to the captain's chair and like rewires it. I'm like, really? Yeah. I don't know. Just didn't feel... I just felt like they could have done something better. Like, it just felt a little... And how is the captain's chair not under... Was it called super security or something? I don't know. Is that thing of just like...
Because it's just the radio.
Yeah, but you rewired the radio. Mm. You know, that to me would just
That, so for me, that made sense because It's the last thing that Harry Mudd was going to check. He was so worried about the big stuff and also, that all they did was rewire communications.
Yeah, it wasn't going to be the last thing that Harry Mudd was going to check. It was the last thing that up himself Captain Mudd would check.
That's
because
right,
he was
that's
already
right.
thinking, it's already Captain Mudd. He's already got complete control where he does the gesture and people disappear.
Which is fantastic.
Which is like which is a callback as well to that Next Gen episode, The Devil's Due, I presume, where they had there was a god who came back, and she wasn't a god. She just had her ship set up so that with tiny movements of her hands and eyes,
it
would signal them to turn on transporters or trigger earthquakes.
Got it.
So I think that was the thing. It was like, it wasn't the security protocol thing doesn't make sense. The captain's chair should probably be the most secure thing.
Yeah.
Or if you can do those, again, if you can do those shields inside and everything else, you should probably just have them everywhere or put one around Mud and suck all the oxygen out. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's different ways, but they wouldn't have given us the character beats we needed.
Mm.
The writers know what they're doing with this show, and I'm really impressed because, you know, the episode, on the one hand, is also essentially about, you know, Burnham's struggles with love, right? And how inhuman she's been, right?
But also, whatever trouble that would be, like normally, like for a Spock character, an Odo character, you've also got the compounded thing of being Starfleet's first mutineer on board. And everyone being like, you started a war.
And they execute the episode with all of the classic Trek tropes, right? It's what Trek does best. Science, time travel, ship in peril.
Love.
And it's to address a very important but minuscule character development.
Mm.
Yeah. In this case, Burnham's love story.
Yeah, there's a line at the beginning. She says something about, I'm with this crew, but more apart from them or something like that. It's a good line of like, she's making friends, she's getting routine and stuff like that, but still she still feels that she'll always be away from them and not part of it. And I thought that was, again, that's the kind of the point of the episode, is that she realizes that she can rely on these people, they will rely on her. Tilly can't hold a drink, and, you know, she should go to more parties.
Also, the resolution of this episode was classic Trek as well, in that no one was brutally murdered or ended in any way. There was no explosion.
Yeah.
Classic Trek, there's always some
Mudd
kind
got off
of
pretty lightly, although he didn't kill anyone that anyone could prove.
No.
Not in that loop.
But also there's a classic resolution of his own comeuppance.
Yeah.
And Trek used to do that a lot.
He got hoisted by his own petard.
His own petard was what happened. And I thought that was also a resolution that I wasn't expecting, not from this series anyway.
I was expecting Lorca to just shove him out an airlock.
Correct.
Yeah.
Which is why it was such a classic resolution to a classic Trek conundrum, right? Mm.
And it also leaves us, if Lorca had thrown out the airlock, it would have been pretty hard to put the right Mudd back in. I think he's going to appear three times in the series.
Yeah, is he? Okay, good. There's more Mudd?
I had this impression of three times.
Right, okay, I was just going to ask, because I was kind of surprised that he came up so quickly, you know, like after his first
appearance. But he was really pissed.
That's true.
That they left him
behind. That is true,
Again, I love you're talking about the Gormagander and everything. I love the fact that he's such a liar, he's even bought into it himself. This whole thing of like Stella, like you can pick up the phone and call her anytime.
Yeah.
You're just doing this because you were pissed.
Yeah.
You were so mad at Lorca that you decided to break the laws of the universe and destroy the entire ship 63 and how many times just to get back at us and just to make some cash. And actually the cash was the main thing.
Yeah.
It turned out in the end it was like, money? When it was like, you can
give
have revenge,
me more money.
Or you can have all the money that you ever want. Is like, I don't care. Lorca, who?
Yeah.
It's like, you can stay at the ship. You do this. You guys work away. I'm going to take all the money.
Yeah.
Yet again, the writers know what they're doing because it's not just your average bottle episode as well.
No.
It's a bottle episode that's actually actively building on everything that's come before.
Mm. Discovery can't do bottle episodes.
No, they can't.
I think it's the thing with the...
And that was my concern. When this episode started, I thought, is this just going to be a standalone...
No.
You know, we've done 5-6 episodes of intensity. Let's take people out of it for a while. No. I mean, they've actually built on everything. Mm. I mean, we get new information, right? We get that now there's 2,000 more people who are dead in the war. It's 10,000 people
is
now who are dead.
Oh,
yeah, they talk about 10,000 people being dead as opposed to 8,186, which was mentioned in episode 3.
And also space wheelchairs.
Space wheelchairs, correct.
Yeah,
and Burnham says as well at the beginning, like, the Discovery has become the secret weapon. Like, it is winning them the war in a way.
Yes, I mean, that's the other piece of new information we get. We're actually winning.
But it's not presented as, like, you know, Sisko standing above, you know, in a boardroom pointing out whether Dominion are winning or losing.
Correct.
It's just like, she's just referring to it in her notes before Stamets starts losing his mind from time travel.
Yeah.
Like, again, this show, I mean, it's going to bankrupt CBS at some point. it's not doing, there's no such thing as a bottle episode on this. The end of this, Tyler has that brilliant moment of like, I'm kind of upset we missed our first kiss.
Which is the best line of the series, I think, right?
I'm just sad we missed
our first kiss.
I'm going to be just so sad when it turns out he's like a spy. I mean, it's going to...
It's really going to kill us
all. I don't know how they're going to resolve that in a way that doesn't just drive people nuts.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the series is also, I mean, with that, the series is also going like boldly where no Star Trek series has ever gone before, which is character development arcs. You know, no, seriously, 7 seasons of Deep Space Nine, and I can probably plot out on a single page how each character has developed, which is very little. Mm. I mean, there are some characters that practically don't develop at all throughout the series. Yeah. I mean,
Chief O'Brien.
He
fixes things at the end of it. He fixes things, and he's got a little bit of PTSD from the war.
Even Major Kira, to a certain extent. She's been angry consistently through all of those episodes of Deep Space Nine.
She got a haircut, fell in love with Odo.
Yeah. And what usually happens in Star Trek is characters don't develop, they die. Mm. When the actors went out.
The other thing was, I mean, for them it was the serialized. You have to put, it's so many different writers, all these kind of different things you got to schedule ahead in advance. It's always have your fun and adventures, put the toys back in the toy box when you're finished so the next person can pick them up. Have to read 7 years worth of episodes to figure out. Oh, Troy would never do that. Why not? Because she lost her pinky in that episode.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm enjoying that these people have a toy box to play with, right? Yeah. Exactly.
Murdering fools, putting PTSD and disabilities on people, and you know, large swathes of the Federation are falling, and Klingons are dying, and it's all happening.
This is just proving my complete, you know, little knowledge on all this. This is before Next Generation, right?
This is before everything. It's before the original series.
Okay, now I have
it's only after the Scott Bakula Star Trek.
Okay.
So it's like the second series in the timeline.
Okay. Just a stupid, non-Trekkie question,
It's
right?
10 years before Kirk took command of the Enterprise.
10 years before. Okay, cool. So, just out of curiosity, would say if Ash, assuming is the Klingon...
Fuck.
Whatever, right? He's
get
a
the
spy.
Fuck out of here.
Evie is a spy, right?
Yeah.
Do you think I don't know. I'm like, could this lead on to like the whole Worf situation?
Worf.
Did they ever explain Worf being.
Yes, I mean, Worf was raised by humans because his family were killed at Camp Khidmer.
That's right.
Which was where the Khidmer Conference was attacked by Romulans. So by that point, Klingons and humans had come to an uneasy peace. Then the Romulans attacked, and that made it more easy. But Worf's house were disgraced. The House of Moh was disgraced. So he couldn't go back to the Klingon Empire as a child. So he was raised by the Roshenkos, if I believe it was correct.
I think it's the Roshenkos, yeah. Yeah.
Sorry I brought that up.
the species, I mean, it's Balanatoris. It's that thing, like the humans and all the races can intermingle in this universe, because there's an episode where it's explained that all the races are descended from a progenitor race who found themselves alone in the universe and basically seeded the universe with their seed.
Okay.
That's why everybody looks kind of human most of the time.
Humanoid.
Yeah, but it comes back. I almost said, I think, 2 episodes ago, we were talking about, like, what is Vok's plan? Because if it's just to get rid of the Discovery, he can do that like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
If Tyler's Vok.
Yeah.
No, I think they want the spore drive.
But the spore drive, the Klingons don't have the ability to pop in and out.
Well, they don't know yet.
Yeah. And he wanted the goal with Laurel. He said, like she said, you wanted to unite the Klingons again.
No, which is why,
and not just unite them in war. Maybe it's like something else.
No, which is why I went back to my theory last week, which was about
you try to go native, right?
Yeah, I think he might go native because his plan is not to beat the humans. That's not his final end game. His final end game is to unite the Klingons, and because his final end game is to unite the Klingons, he will take on Kor. I think Vok and Ash Tyler or whatever, I think they're the true believers as opposed to the militaristic commanders.
Because what Kol's doing will unite the Klingons for now. The squabbling and everything. Once the Klingons are at war, they're always united. I think they mentioned that in a few episodes. They're unite for war, but when there's times of peace, they start
that's
to turn
what they
against
don't want
each
to
other.
Do, yeah.
So yeah, he needs to tie it back to T'Kuvma and to Kallus, the light of Kallus and all that kind of stuff. Has to be like the warrior's way without murdering each other all the time, because again, that's not a very good way to get ahead. If you're murdering all your scientists all the time, you won't have cloaking devices and warp drives and things. So
it'll be interesting to see how the politics of all of this plays out, especially with regard to the Klingons. I mean, we haven't spent a significant amount of time with the Klingons.
No.
Not since episode 4.
And even then it was Vok and Laurel.
Correct. So I don't think we will get a Klingon bottle episode, but at the same time, it'll be nice to see their motivations from their point of view as opposed to just seeing it through Michael's point of view or Lorca's point of view, right? Yeah. Which is all we've been seeing.
Has that ever been done, like a bottle episode that's not with the main crew?
Riker did a transfer to a Klingon ship once, and I think someone else did as well. Did Worf do it at one point? Like, there's a couple of times they...
There was recently an episode of The Orville where they actually based it all on a Krill ship. The captain and his pilot put on these hollow cloaking transference devices, thingies, and became Krills. And then to find out more about Krill culture and religion.
Oh.
Yes.
And I think Voyager did that as one as well, where there was the episode where there was like a race that like observed the Voyager, like it had an impact on their society. Like they've done that a few times. And there's one with a museum, right? The visiting of the war people.
Oh, that's right.
There's like a museum on this planet where hundreds of years later, it's like the war criminals from Voyager who destroyed our civilization. It turned out it was all, you know, it all been distorted propaganda by the lens of history. Oh. So they've done those things where, like, you know, Patrick Stewart needs to rest for a week or something like that.
Same when he goes off to France.
Yeah, same with the Doctor disappears in Doctor Who ever so often. They do an episode without him in it.
Mm.
But I just, I don't understand. I don't see how this Vox theory, I understand. It makes it perfect sense. I don't see
how it's going to play out.
I don't see the end game. No. Yeah.
And that's great.
Yeah. Just like, by the way, there's an admiral we just forgot about. You know,
forget about her. Yeah, it's fine.
She's probably still a POW. I think, you know, they're probably figuring out what the hell to do with Admiral Kat.
I'm still completely staying away from anything showing what's on next week because I literally have no idea.
Yeah.
It could be about Tilly's cat for the whole episode, for all I know.
And let's be honest, from the past few episodes, if it was about Tilly's cat, you'd be like, okay, let's see where
this goes.
Let's see where this goes, right? I don't trust these writers. Let's see where this goes.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man, throughout this episode, do you remember that episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer? There's an episode called Life Serial, and it's all I was thinking about through this episode where one of the characters just goes, I hope she solves this faster than Data did on that episode of Next Generation when the Enterprise keeps blowing up. And then another character goes, oh, Mulder in that X-Files episode where the bank kept exploding. And that's all I was thinking. The looping stuff. And I just kept going, I hope she solves this really quickly. I hope Stamets does it. And they did, right? I've not seen a time loop episode that's been this well executed with regards to viewer frustration. I was not frustrated throughout, and I was compelled to watch and find out what was going to happen next. And that ending made me so happy because it was also unexpected and it didn't play out like how I thought it would.
And now I'm just starting to, the build up is starting for getting annoyed that there's only two episodes left before we go on the break.
Two episodes, man. Episode 9, and then we go on a break until 2018. It's going to be interminable. The wait's going to be awful.
I think we do have titles for those. We have, next one is Si Vis Pacem Para Bellum, which is if you want peace, prepare for war.
Nice.
And the one after that is Into the Forest I Go, which I presume is a quote for some poem or something like that. But could that be Stamets? Could that be Burnham? Could it be, who knows? Into the Forest is obviously the metaphor for Klingons. The Klingons cliffhangers.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Into the Forest I Go.
Clinging on for the cliffhanger.
Yeah, Into the Forest I Go, part one.
Yes.
Damn it.
And I'd really hate it to be like a Stamets thing going to the mycelium plane and then end. And then, you know, stay tuned to 2018. I throw things at my TV.
At least it's only January, right? We got to wait till January.
Is it January?
Yeah, January, I think. So it's not too long away. I guess they're taking a break for Christmas.
Okay.
I'm really glad that they could pull off a Trekkie episode
of Discovery. Stuff and everything else, yeah.
Yeah, in amongst all of this stuff, because this is an episode that had lighthearted moments, it was fun, and yet there was a really serious undertone as to what was going on.
And yet the crew died every 30 minutes.
The crew died every 30 minutes, and the captain probably died more often than that, right? And I'm going to kill you again.
Yes.
And the look on Lorca's face, like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
The line he says, there are so many ways to blow up this ship, it's almost like a design flaw.
That was a great one. Yeah. Folks, go check out Star Trek Discovery, magic to make the sanest man go mad. If you're not into this series yet, what the hell are you waiting for?
Why the hell are you listening to this?
That's true. Also, maybe they just like listening to us talk about things they have no idea about.
Also, if you haven't gotten into the show yet, why are you still watching the show?
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. If you do hate the show, why have you stuck with it through episode 7?
I hate watching it.
If it hasn't done anything you've liked so far, it's unlikely to do so in episode 8.
Just find other things to do.
There's a lot of other stuff to watch.
Go watch The Orville.
Stranger Things 2 or The Orville or Mindhunter. But for us, we're going to be... I'm so happy this is unfurling week to week. I'm loving the suspense of waiting.
There's an
excitement on Sunday night.
Yes.
It's Star Trek Day.
Yeah. And I think also for me, there was a concern when it was first announced that they were doing a new Star Trek. It was going to be on CBS All Access Online, I don't know about you guys, but I remember thinking, another Star Trek? Really? Is this what we really need right now? And also, it's online. Really, what is going on? But I'm glad to say I was wrong, and I'm happy that I was wrong, because this show is great.
Bahir is eating his words.
Oh, gleefully.
Folks, let us know what you thought of Star Trek Discovery Episode 7, Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. You can tweet me. I'm on at Umar Pagan.
I'm on at McNasty Prime.
I'm at Bahiwai.
This has been Binge Watch on At The Movies, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.